Mahabharata, Chapter 13, Arjuna's Pilgrimage. It was more than a year since Narada Rishi's visit. The Pandavas' power and influence had increased, and they had brought many other kings under their sway. They ruled with one aim, to keep the people on a path of piety and truth. By their own example, they showed how happiness follows a life of virtue. In everything they did, they accepted the guidance of spiritually advanced Brahmins. Indraprastha flourished and became more than the equal of Hastinapur in the world's eyes. Due to his unswerving adherence to virtue, Yudhisthira became known as Dharmaraj, the king of religion. Draupadi pleased her five husbands with her feminine graces and expert attentions. And according to their arrangement, each of the brothers was allotted time in which to be alone with her. One day it so happened that while Draupadi was alone with Yudhisthira, a Brahmin came to the Pandava's palace. Standing by the gate, he cried out, "O king, a Brahmin's wealth is being robbed by wicked and despicable men. Alas, how can it be that in the kingdom of the virtuous Pandavas, the Brahmins are not protected? A king who takes his taxes but fails to protect the people is considered the most sinful of men. O heroes, take me by the hand and deliver me from this burning anguish." In anger and grief, the Brahmin repeatedly cried out. Arjuna heard his cries and called out, "Do not fear." He quickly went to fetch his weapons in order to punish the thieves, but discovered that Yudhisthira was alone with Draupadi in the room which held the weapons chest. Arjuna hesitated. How could he intrude upon his elder brother, especially as they had made their agreement? But here was an afflicted Brahmin. If he did not protect him, then Yudhisthira's fame would perish, and he would be tainted by sin. Arjuna could not stand by and watch his brother be accused of irreligion. He had to get the weapons, even though it meant he would be exiled to the forest. He felt that even if he died in the forest, it would be preferable to being covered by sin. Arjuna resolved to enter the chamber and gather his weapons. He knocked on the door and walked in. Looking straight ahead of him, he strode quickly toward the weapons. Yudhisthira smiled to see his younger brother. He knew Arjuna must have an important reason for entering. Arjuna then explained the situation, took his bow, and rushed out of the palace. Taking the Brahmin and mounting his chariot, he pursued the robbers. When he saw them in the distance, Arjuna released infallible arrows, striking down the thieves as they made off with the Brahmin's cows. Having dealt swift justice to the robbers, Arjuna restored the property to the grateful Brahmin and returned to the city. Yudhisthira greeted his brother warmly as he entered the palace. Along with his brothers, he applauded Arjuna for saving the Brahmin. Arjuna bowed before Yudhisthira and said, "O Lord, please give me permission to observe the vow as we have agreed. I shall leave for the forest at once." Yudhisthira's heart was pierced by grief when he heard Arjuna's statement. He immediately replied, "Why should you go? O sinless one, if I am your authority, then heed my words now. I was not in the least disturbed by your entering the room. There is no need for you to leave for the forest." Yudhisthira looked tearfully at his handsome, curly-haired brother. How could he face separation from this virtuous and gentle soul? He explained to Arjuna that the scripture sanctioned a younger brother entering a room where his elder brother sat with his wife. It was only when the elder brother intruded upon the younger that it was condemned. Arjuna had entered the room only in pursuance of duty and in service to Yudhisthira. But Arjuna was adamant. "My lord, I've heard from you that virtue must be practiced without hesitation or quibble. I shall not waver from truth. Truth is my weapon and virtue my strength. Grant me permission to leave, and I shall proceed to the forest today." Despite the other Pandavas' repeated pleas, Arjuna could not be swayed. Finally, Yudhisthira relented and gave his permission. Although it would be painful to think of his younger brother in exile for so long, It must somehow be the arrangement of providence. Surely the Lord had some inscrutable purpose which would ultimately prove to their benefit. He watched sadly as Arjuna left the city, accompanied by Brahmins chanting sacred hymns and by servants carrying wealth for him to distribute as charity while he traveled. The young prince went on foot toward the north. He had decided to first follow the Ganges course toward the Himalayas and then proceed eastward to the coast. Following the coastline in a great circle, he would finally return to Indraprastha. Arjuna traveled at a leisurely pace. He saw charming woodlands, lakes, and gardens. There were countless hermitages along the banks of the Ganges where sages lived, and each evening Arjuna would stop and recite prayers in their company. He would also listen as the sages narrated tales from the ancient scriptures about the pastimes of the Supreme Lord in his many incarnations. Arjuna often thought of his cousin and dear friend Krishna as he walked. He hoped to visit him toward the end of his exile. The Pandava listened as the sages described how Krishna was the unborn, original personality of Godhead, appearing on earth to destroy demoniac men and to establish the eternal religion, pure love of God. As he traveled, Arjuna also performed fire sacrifices to please Vishnu and the gods. One evening, just as the Brahmins were kindling the sacred fire, Arjuna entered the Ganges in order to bathe. He was just about to then leave the river when he suddenly felt himself being drawn underwater by an unseen force. Despite his efforts to free himself, he was dragged deeply into the river. He then found himself mystically transported to a celestial palace. Arjuna looked around and saw a sacred fire burning in the room he had entered. The prince immediately sat before the fire and offered libations of ghee into the flames, fearlessly reciting the mantras. Just as Arjuna was completing his evening rituals in that strange place, a beautiful girl entered the room. She glanced coyly at Arjuna and smiled. He recognized her at once to be a maiden belonging to the celestial Naga race. Arjuna understood at once what had happened. The Nagas have the power to transfer humans to their own heavenly dimension of existence. Obviously, this girl had become attracted to him and had drawn him down to her abode. He smiled back and said, "O beautiful maiden, you have been bold indeed. Who are you, and where is this divine region?" The girl replied that she was the daughter of a Naga king named Kauravya. Her name was Alupi. "When you entered the river for your bath, I was moving through the waters in my ethereal form. I was struck by Cupid's arrow as soon as I saw your godlike form. O descendant of Kuru, I am yet unmarried. Therefore accept me as your wife. Give yourself up to me and gratify me today." Arjuna said that he was bound by a vow of celibacy for 1 year. He could therefore not accept her as his wife. Still, as she was a Naga, he knew she must have already known this by her celestial intelligence. She would not have asked him to marry her if her request did not somehow conform to the codes of virtue. Indeed, the scriptures enjoined that a Kshatriya should never refuse a maiden who supplicated herself to him. Arjuna asked her how he could satisfy her desire while at the same time maintain his truthfulness. Alupi replied, "I know of your vow, O hero. You and your brothers made a rule in regard to Draupadi. This is well known to the gods. But that rule pertained only to your wife. It is with her whom you must not consort for the next year. There will be no sin in accepting another woman." Filled with desire for the powerful Pandava hero, Alupi beseeched him to accept her. She explained that such an act would be his highest duty under the present circumstances. The Naga princess knew that Arjuna would act only when impelled by virtuous motives. She told him that if he did not take her as his wife, she would destroy herself. Thus he would be saving her life by accepting her. And that was certainly a greater virtue than observing celibacy. Even if his piety suffered a slight loss by his going with her, he would gain greater merits by having saved the life of a helpless woman who had approached him for shelter. Arjuna thought carefully. He decided that the Naga maiden was speaking the truth, and that he would not be acting wrongly to accept her as his wife. He smiled and nodded in assent. Alupi quickly fetched 2 celestial garlands, which she and Arjuna duly exchanged, to signify their acceptance of one another. Having sealed their union according to scriptural injunctions, Arjuna spent the night with her in Karavya's palace. Alupi waited upon him and offered him every kind of celestial food and drink. They then lay together on a golden bed in the heavenly mansion and conceived a child. In the morning, Arjuna rose just before sunrise. Alupi brought him back through the Ganges to the place where he had bathed the night before. Before leaving him, Alupi blessed Arjuna. "You shall be invincible in water. Every aquatic creature will be vanquished by you in a fight." After telling Arjuna that she would return to him later when he was back in his own kingdom, Alupi vanished into the Ganges water, leaving Arjuna to be greeted by his followers. The ascetic Brahmins had seen by their own divine sight how the prince had been taken to the region of the Nagas. They met him as he returned and offered him their blessings. Arjuna related to them everything that had happened. The party continued on to the Himalayas and soon arrived at the Brigo Mountain, where the famous Vasishtha Rishi had once had his hermitage. Many Brahmins lived on that hill, and Arjuna distributed much charity to them. After bathing in a sacred lake on the Brigo Mountain, he walked on, visiting numerous other holy sites. Arjuna went toward the east, gradually descending from the Himalaya range. He reached the forest of Naimisharanya, said by the sages to be the very hub of the universe. From there, he crossed over the rivers Nanda, Upananda, and the famous Kaushika, where the great Rishi Vishvamitra had performed asceticism for thousands of years in ancient days. Desiring to increase his piety, Arjuna traveled from one pilgrimage site to another, along with his retinue. He performed many sacrificial ceremonies and gave away much wealth. When he reached the border of the kingdom of Kalinga on the eastern coast, he bade farewell to most of his followers and entered the kingdom with only a few attendants. Arjuna journeyed through forests, woodlands, and numerous towns and villages. He passed the great Mount Mahendra and finally arrived in Manipur, where he visited King Chitravahana in his city of Manalur. The king had an attractive daughter named Chitrangada. Arjuna saw her one day in the palace gardens and was struck with desire. He approached the king and asked for his daughter's hand in marriage. Chitravahana had only a daughter. If Arjuna begot a son with his daughter, he must leave the boy to become the next king of Manipur. Arjuna happily accepted the condition and was married to the princess with all due ceremony. He remained in the city for 3 months. When he saw that Chitrangada had conceived, he took his leave from her and the king, setting out again on his travels. Before leaving, he promised Chitrangada that he would return and bring her to his home in Indraprastha. Arjuna then made his way south along the coast. When he reached the southern coast, he found a large community of rishis. He asked them to point out the local pilgrimage sites, and the rishis informed him that there were 5 sacred lakes in that region, which could not be approached because they were infested with crocodiles. These lakes could confer great merits upon anyone who bathed in them, but as soon as a man entered the water, he would be carried away by one of the powerful reptiles. Arjuna saw an opportunity to serve the ascetics. He remembered his boon from Alupi. Going to the lake named Agastya, after the famous rishi who once lived there, he dived into the water. Arjuna's leg was immediately seized by a great crocodile. Feeling the divine strength conferred by Alupi, he grasped hold of the animal and pulled it out of the water. Arjuna dashed the creature onto the shore. It suddenly became limp, and a beautiful celestial maiden came out of its body. Seeing that wonderful sight, Arjuna asked, "Who are you, O beautiful one? Why have you committed such sins in this lake, carrying away holy ascetics?" The maiden stood before Arjuna with folded palms. "O mighty hero, I am the Apsara, named Varga, ever beloved of Kuvera." Varga explained that she had once been going with four of her friends to see Kuvera. As they traveled through a heavenly woodland region, they saw a Brahmin meditating in a lonely place. He was extremely handsome, and he lit up the woods with his bodily luster. The five Apsaras playfully tried to disturb his meditation. They danced and sang before him, trying to tempt him away from his ascetic practices. Although unmoved by lust, the Brahmin was angered by their behavior. He then cursed them. "As you attack me now without compunction, you five shall become crocodiles, whose business is attacking others." The maidens at once came to their senses. Showing contrition, they begged the Brahmin for mercy. He relented and told them that they would soon be delivered from their crocodile bodies by a powerful man. At that moment, the great sage Narada Rishi arrived there and told them to enter the five sacred lakes on Bharata's south coast. Soon Arjuna would come and release them from their bondage. Varga bowed before the Pandava and thanked him for delivering her. She then asked him to save her four friends, who lived in each of the four other lakes. Arjuna smiled and went quickly to each holy lake. He pulled out all the other crocodiles, and each time he watched as a maiden of shining beauty came out of the fierce reptilian body. The five Apsaras came together, and, after offering Arjuna their respects, rose up to the heavens. Having made the lake safe again, Arjuna took his leave from the rishis and proceeded on his journey. Arjuna traveled up Bharata's western coast until he arrived at Prabhasa. In the sea near Prabhasa, Krishna had constructed a city called Dwarka. Arjuna could see the splendid fortress city from a distance, shining like the sun on the horizon. It could only be reached by passing along a heavily guarded bridge. When he reached the bridge, Arjuna sent word of his arrival to Krishna, who immediately came out of the city to see his dear friend. They embraced with joy. News of Arjuna's exile from Indraprastha had already reached Dwarka, and Krishna had been expecting him to arrive before the year was up. He knew that Arjuna was interested in gaining the hand of his sister Subhadra. Arjuna had heard much about the princess from Gada, Krishna's cousin who had studied under Drona, along with the Pandavas. Gada had described her as being incomparably beautiful and endowed with every womanly qualification. Just by hearing the descriptions, Arjuna's heart had become attracted. He had resolved even then to somehow win her as his wife. And that would forge an alliance between the Pandavas and their beloved Lord Krishna. Arjuna told Krishna about his travels to the holy places, and the Vrishnihira replied, "This is all good. Your piety and virtue are ever increasing." The Pandava prince turned quickly to the subject of Subhadra. He asked Krishna how she might be won. Krishna smiled. "This princess is worthy of you in every way, O tiger among men. But who knows what would be her decision at a Swayamvara? For a hero, the surest way to win a maiden is to carry her away by force. This is always the way of the powerful, and it is sanctioned by the holy scriptures." Krishna added that his brother Balaram was intent on seeing her married to Duryodhan, even though no one else in Dwarka was very keen on this suggestion. Krishna especially did not like the idea. He would much prefer Arjuna to take his sister's hand. But Balaram was the city father, and Krishna's elder brother, and Krishna did not want to go against his wishes. He told Arjuna to be patient. They would devise a plan. In the meanwhile, they could spend some time together. Arjuna still had 4 months remaining of his exile. He could spend it at Dwarka. Krishna suggested that Arjuna keep his identity concealed. If he entered the city openly, he would not get a chance to see Subhadra. She lived in Balaram's palace and was never seen in public. Her first appearance would be at her marriage. If Arjuna went into the city dressed as a renunciant, however, Balaram would doubtlessly invite him for meals. Krishna knew that his elder brother was very fond of entertaining ascetics and sages, and also that he always arranged for Subhadra to serve them, so that she might be blessed and increase her virtue. Arjuna should therefore disguise himself as a renunciate, a member of the sannyas order. No one would recognize him if he matted his hair and kept his beard, especially when dressed in the saffron robes of a sannyasi. He could then live in Dwarka during the coming months and await an opportunity to win the beautiful Subhadra. The rainy season was just upon them, and it was customary for wandering ascetics to stay in cities till the rains had passed. Krishna went back into his city, and Arjuna waited a few more days outside before entering. Krishna's plan had sounded good. The Pandava wanted a chance to see Subhadra, and also for her to see him. Pious, he did not want to steal her against her desire. If she were not attracted to him, he would leave her in peace. He tied his hair in a knot above his head and put on the dress of a renunciate. Taking up the triple-rotted staff traditionally carried by Vaishnav sannyasis, those worshippers of Vishnu in the renounced order, Arjuna entered Dwarka. The unsuspecting gatekeepers allowed the ascetic to pass, folding their palms in respect as he walked by. Arjuna made his way along the huge golden bridge that spanned the ocean to the city, and which was encrusted with precious stones. At intervals, the bridge opened out onto spacious platforms, where well-armed soldiers stood guard. None of them recognized Arjuna as he passed. When Arjuna reached the city, he was stunned by its opulence. Symmetrically arranged around the city center were 16,000 white palaces, one for each of Krishna's 16,000 queens. Each palace was bedecked with gold and jewels, and each rivaled the celestial Mount Meru in its size and opulence. Magnificent temples rose up on all sides, and the sounds of sacred chants could be heard everywhere. Beautiful music filled the air, and billows of fragrant incense wafted the breeze. Shining chariots and great elephants moved here and there. Attractively dressed citizens strolled about the wide avenues, which were inlaid with priceless emeralds and interspersed with gardens stocked with celestial flowers. In the midst of the delightful gardens, jeweled fountains stood in lotus-filled lakes. Trees bearing blossoms of every color stood along the roadsides. All around the city, a massive fortified wall, a full 100 miles long, rose up from the sea. Arjuna gazed about in wonder as he made his way to the Brahmin's quarter of the city. Krishna had arranged that his friend be given a large house for his residence. He told him that he would inform Balaram of the arrival of a Vaishnava sannyasi, and that Arjuna could expect to soon be invited to Balaram's palace, where he would see Subhadra. Arjuna felt as if he had ascended to Indra's abode in the heavenly planets. The gods were even seen frequenting Dwarka, and it seemed as if its residents were celebrating a never-ending festival. As Krishna had expected, Balaram arranged for Arjuna to be brought to his palace and offered varieties of delicious food. He had his sister Subhadra serve the sannyasi so that she might receive his blessings. The princess stole Arjuna's mind away. She was everything he had heard she was. Subhadra was as beautiful as Vishnu's divine consort, Lakshmi. With her blue silk garments, gold earrings and ornaments, and long curling black hair, she could capture the hearts of even the celestials. She moved about with grace and poise as she served the ascetic. Arjuna tried not to stare at her as he accepted the golden dishes she placed before him, but the princess caught his glance and saw the sparkle in his eyes. She looked more carefully at the sannyasi. He did not resemble the other ascetics Balaram had brought to the house. This ascetic looked more like a prince. Beneath his thin cotton cloth, Subhadra could see his broad and powerful shoulders. As he accepted the dishes she offered, she noticed his long, well-muscled arms, which resembled a pair of five-hooded serpents. She could see that behind his beard, the young sannyasi was extremely handsome. His dark eyes pierced hers, and she felt her heart move. It was obvious that he desired her. Perhaps he was looking for a bride. She knew that Balaram was trying to arrange her marriage to Duryodhan, but the young sage seemed a better prospect than the conceited Kuru prince. Subhadra wondered who this ascetic might be. Over the coming weeks, Balaram invited Arjuna to his palace on numerous occasions. Each time Subhadra served him, and their attraction for one another grew. One day, in confidence, Krishna spoke with his sister on the subject of her marriage. She told him of her feelings for the strange sannyasi, and Krishna smiled. He asked her how she felt about Duryodhan. The prince's features twisted disdainfully. Then Krishna mentioned Arjuna's name, telling her that the Pandava was desirous of becoming her husband. Indeed, he had come to Dwarka to seek her hand. Subhadra looked at him intently. Suddenly, she realized what he was saying. The handsome ascetic was Arjuna. Why had she not guessed? The so-called sannyasi, who walked like a powerful lion and spoke with a voice resembling thunder, could only be a great ruler. Subhadra was suddenly excited. If only she could become the wife of that famous Kuru hero. But Krishna cautioned her to remain quiet about his identity. If Balaram learned the truth, there would be trouble. She should be patient. Arjuna would surely find a way to marry her. It was almost the end of the monsoon season. Balaram invited the sannyasi to his place for a final visit. Again Subhadra served him. By glances and smiles, she made her feelings clear to the Pandava. Arjuna's heart pounded. He could hardly eat. He prayed that he would soon get a chance to make the princess his bride. When the meal was over, Balaram gave gold and jewels to the sannyasi and sent him home. Arjuna left with his mind in turmoil. He had to somehow gain Subhadra's hand. During the last weeks of the rainy season, his mind remained fixed on the princess. Finally, the rains ended, and it was time for Arjuna to leave Dwarka. Krishna came to see him and told him that there would be a festival on the Raivataka hill, which skirted the mainland coastline around Dwarka. All of the Yadus would attend. The beautiful Subhadra would also be there. Krishna suggested that this might be the time for which Arjuna had been waiting. Arjuna's eyes lit up as Krishna, sitting next to him on the couch, explained the plan. O best of men, I do not see any way you can obtain Subhadra other than by kidnapping her from the midst of her friends and relatives. The festival will provide an opportunity for you, as the powerful heroes of the Yadu dynasty will be at ease and not expecting trouble. The festival was to be held in a few days, and Krishna arranged for swift messengers to ride to nearby Indraprastha. Arjuna wanted to obtain Yudhisthira's permission before snatching away Subhadra. Such an act would likely arouse the anger of the mighty Balaram, and might even precipitate a fight between the Pandavas and the Yadus. But Krishna told him not to fear. He would pacify Balaram when the time came. I will convince my irascible brother of the propriety and excellence of an alliance with your house, O Partha. You need only take the maiden and make off with her with all speed. When Yudhisthira's permission arrived, Arjuna prepared himself to kidnap the princess. On the day of the festival, Subhadra came out of the city surrounded by her relatives. All the great personalities of Dwarka were present. King Ugrasena, Akrura, Gada, Saraba, Babru, Satyaki, Uddhava, and many others, and they resembled an assembly of the gods. The Gandharvas also appeared, and they played sweet celestial music as the Apsaras danced. Dwarka's citizens came out on their golden chariots and on the backs of great elephants. Above them hovered the aerial cars of the Siddhas and Charanas, uttering auspicious Vedic hymns in praise of Krishna and Balaram, who shone in the midst of the assembly like the sun and the moon. From the sky the gods showered celestial flowers and played their heavenly instruments. As evening approached, Arjuna came unnoticed out of the city. He had changed his dress and put on armor. His year of exile was over, and he had cut his hair and resumed his normal appearance. Krishna met him and gave him a chariot drawn by Shaibya and Sugriva, two of Krishna's celestial steeds. As the Yadus sported and enjoyed themselves in the fragrant woodlands on the Raivataka, Arjuna mounted his chariot. Then he saw Subhadra, surrounded by her friends and maidservants, standing near a temple of Vishnu. Without delay, Arjuna spurred the horses and rushed toward the princess. Subhadra looked up in surprise as she heard the clatter of the fast-approaching chariot. Holding the reins was Arjuna, with a great bow slung on his back and a sword hanging from his side. Subhadra's heart leapt. The prince was heading straight for her. In less than a minute, he had taken hold of her hand and pulled her onto the chariot. And before anyone could react, he raced away to the north, back to Indraprastha. As they realized what happened, the Yadus became incensed. How dare anyone kidnap their princess before their eyes? Who could have been so bold? Some of them said it was Arjuna from Indraprastha. The Yadu warriors ran about in all directions, trying to find their weapons and chariots. And Dwarka, the chief officer of the court, stood in the central square of the city and blew his golden trumpet. It was a call to arms. A council of war was hastily assembled in the Yadu court. As the ministers and generals quickly took their places in the Sudharma assembly hall, Balaram spoke. His angry voice echoed around the hall. Why has Arjuna insulted us in this way? Did he not consider us worthy of a peaceful approach? He has stolen Subhadra without even speaking to any of us. Surely this means war. Balaram glanced around the assembly with eyes reddened with fury. The thousands of Yadu warriors present rose like so many fires blazing up when fed with oil. Bring my armor, fetch my weapons, yoke my chariot, and I shall give chase to this insolent Pandava. Amid the uproar, only Krishna remained unmoved, seated upon his beautiful, jewel-encrusted throne at the head of the assembly. Seeing this, Balaram spoke again. With his pure white complexion, blue robes, and wildflower garlands, he resembled a white mountain covered with blossoms. His voice again echoed around the hall. Stop! O senseless men, what are you doing while Krishna remains silent? Cease your roaring, and let us hear what is on his mind before we act. His words are always our surest guide. Balaram looked across at his brother. O Janardhan, Arjuna is your friend, but it appears that he has insulted us. By snatching away my sister, he has placed his foot upon my head. O Govinda, how shall I bear it? I will rid the earth of the Kurus by myself today. I will never book an insult from them lightly. The whole assembly erupted again as Balaram spoke, roaring in approval. Krishna only smiled. As the sound died down, he said, I do not feel that Arjuna has insulted us. Indeed, my feelings are that he has enhanced our glory. Partha knows that we would not accept payment or gift for our princess. What man on earth would sell his child to another? Nor would Arjuna accept the maiden as a gift, as if she were an animal. He has therefore selected the method always preferred by powerful heroes. The hall remained silent as Krishna continued to speak. He said that he considered an alliance with the Pandavas, and especially with Arjuna, as proper. Arjuna had been born in the noble Bharata race. He was the son of the illustrious Kunti from their own house. No man on earth was capable of vanquishing Arjuna in battle. He was now proceeding on Krishna's own chariot and would be difficult to check. Subhadra and Arjuna were a good match. Better that they send swift messengers to bring him back in peace and arrange for a proper wedding. That would avoid the disgrace of being defeated by Arjuna and would enhance the alliance forged by the marriage. After all, there was now no question of Subhadra being accepted by another man. Having concluded his speech, Krishna looked around the assembly. Some of the Adus voiced doubts, but Krishna answered them all expertly. Gradually the mood changed. The Yadu heroes looked at one another in affirmation of Krishna's words. His points were good. Arjuna was the world's greatest warrior, and his dynasty were world emperors. His marriage to Subhadra was the arrangement of providence for the good of the Yadus. They immediately sent messengers after Arjuna. He was brought back and received with honor. The city was decked out in flags and festoons, and a great ceremony took place. Arjuna accepted Subhadra's hand before the sacred fire with the blessings of the rishis. Then he remained in the city for a few more days. Finally, taking permission from Krishna and Balaram, he returned home. After a year away, Arjuna longed to see his brothers again and to introduce Subhadra to them.